Welcome to the deep dive. So I want you to think about the last time you spoke to an AI on your phone.
Oh, yeah, we all do it, right?
Right. And maybe you paused, or you said, or you even gave this little sarcastic laugh. And the wild part is that the machine actually caught that sarcasm in your voice.
It's crazy. It wasn't just transcribing your words like it used to. It was actually listening to your humanity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And today we are unpacking an incredibly comprehensive timeline compiled by Wang Yao Li. He's an applied AI and speech engineer, and this timeline shows exactly how we got here.
And I mean, it is a monumental journey. We are charting the entire history of speech recognition and synthesis, starting all the way back in 1937.
1937, wow.
Yeah, and bringing us right up to the cutting edge, omnimodal models of 2026. But what's really crucial to understand as we go through Lai's timeline is that this isn't just a simple list of software updates.
Right, it's bigger than that.
Much bigger. This is the story of how engineers literally had to deconstruct human perception.
So, they had to figure out the mechanics of biology first.
Precisely. They had to understand how your ears actually process sound and how your vocal cords physically produce speech.
Which is super messy.
Oh, incredibly messy.
Yeah.
Wet biology, right? And then they had to translate all of that into pure mathematics. Because until they did that, they couldn't even begin to teach a machine to communicate.
And that's our mission today, to follow that mathematical translation. We are going to explore how we went from machines that required a human operator pumping foot pedals just to produce a single robotic vowel.
Sounds exhausting.
Right. From that to these fluid, real-time conversational agents that can interrupt you, sense your hesitation, and perfectly match your emotional tone.
It's a huge leap.
It really is.
Okay.
Okay, so let's unpack this. We have to jump back almost 90 years to what Wang Yao Li categorizes as the mechanical and early electronic era.
Which starts with a fundamental problem in the 1930s. Engineers realized that physical sound waves, measured in raw hertz.
Right, the physics of it.
Yeah, they do not actually match how human ears work.
Meaning our ears aren't just objective microphones.
Right, exactly. At loader pitches, humans are incredibly sensitive to tiny changes in frequency. But at higher pitches, those frequencies all sort of bunch together in our ears.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and we can't tell them apart as easily. So in 1937, researchers created the Mel scale.
The Mel scale.
Yeah, it was a mathematical formula that mapped physical frequency to how humans actually perceive pitch. It was really the first real bridge between raw acoustic physics and human auditory resolution.
That makes a lot of sense. But if we want to talk about actually generating speech, things get wonderfully tactile just a couple of years later in 1939.
Oh, at Bell Labs.
Yes, Bell Labs with a machine called the Voder. I was reading the notes on this in the source material and it completely blew my mind.
It's a wild machine.
It was a manual speech synthesizer. I'm picturing an operator sitting at this massive, complex console using a keyboard and foot pedals to control all the different elements of a voice.
Yeah, it's like a.
It's like someone trying to play a pipe organ, right? But instead of musical notes, the music coming out of the pipes is human speech.
The pipe organ is the perfect analogy, honestly.
Yeah.
The operator was literally performing the speech in real time.
Wow.
Like, one pedal might control the fundamental pitch, while keys would simulate the hissing of breath or the hard clicks of consonants.
That sounds impossibly hard.
It was. It took operators months of intense practice just to make the voter say hello in a way that didn't sound completely terrifying.
Umps, just to say hello.
Yeah, exactly. But what's really fascinating here is the core concept it proved, which carried over into the Dudley vocoder the very next year, in 1940.
Okay, 1940.
Yeah, it introduced a concept called analysis synthesis.
Wait, so instead of sending the actual physical sound of a voice over a wire,
Like a standard telephone.
right, the Dudley vocoder just sent the mathematical instructions on how to rebuild the voice on the other side.
Yes.
It's like mailing someone a recipe instead of trying to mail them a fully baked cake.
That is exactly what they were doing.
Hmm.
The realization was that a raw audio waveform is massive. It takes up too much bandwidth.
Right, way too much data.
But if you analyze the speech and separate out the essential ingredients, like the raw buzz of the vocal cords and the shape of the mouth, you can send just that tiny, compact set of instructions.
The recipe.
Right. Then on the receiving end, a synthesizer reconstructs the speech using those instructions. You are sending the blueprint, not the building. And this abstraction survived for
But
decades.
to send a blueprint, you have to be able to draw it.
Exactly.
And that brings us to this massive aha moment for the field. And honestly, for me, reading this timeline, In 1946, they invented the sound spectrograph.
A huge milestone.
It took speech and finally made it visible. It mapped out a changing distribution of energy over time and frequency.
Because up until this point, sound was invisible. To teach a machine to hear, researchers first had to teach it to see sound.
Right, to visualize it.
Yeah. Once you can look at a spectrogram, this visual graph of audio, you can spot something called a formant.
Which is basically the acoustic fingerprint of a specific vowel, right?
Yes, exactly.
Like a dark band of energy vibrating in your vocal tract.
Yeah, so when you make an E sound versus an A sound, your throat and mouth change shape. And those dark bands of energy actually shift on the graph.
Oh, wow.
So once researchers could visually measure those formants, they finally had a practical bridge between raw acoustics and linguistic structure.
Which naturally leads to early recognition systems, like Bell Labs' Audrey in 1952.
Right, Audrey.
Audrey could actually recognize spoken digits 0 through 9. But looking at the timeline, it feels like recognizing a few numbers spoken under perfect conditions by a specific person whose voice the machine was tuned to.
It was very constrained.
Yeah, it was essentially a parlor trick. It was basic pattern matching. If we wanted a machine to recognize natural, continuous, everyday talking, the math needed to get significantly more sophisticated.
Which ushers in the era of statistical search.
Okay.
Moving into the 1960s through the 2000s, speech engineering transitioned from those acoustic parlor tricks into a massive exercise in probability. You see this starting with the Viterbi algorithm in 1967.
And that directly paves the way for hidden Markov models, or HMMs, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because the timeline points out that HMMs became the absolute workhorse of the field by 1989.
They dominated everything.
Now, the way I understand HMMs, it's essentially treating human speech like a game of probability. Because the machine can't perfectly see the exact word being spoken because it's hidden in all this messy audio.
Right, hence the hidden part.
Ah, right. So the model looks at the current sound and uses statistics to guess the most probable next sound, chaining them together to form words.
That is a really great way to visualize it.
Yeah.
If the model hears a strong S sound, the statistics tell it that an H sound or a T sound is highly probable next.
Right, like shoe or stop.
Exactly. While an X sound is extremely unlikely, by chaining these probabilities together through thousands of potential paths, the hidden Markov model guesses the most likely sequence of words.
And this scaled beautifully. By 1988, you had the CMU Sphinx system, which used these probability models to finally handle large vocabulary, continuous speech.
Even from people that had never even heard before.
Right, but hold on a second. These statistical models sound incredibly elegant on paper, but let's be real for a minute.
Okay.
You and I constantly interrupt each other. We mumble, we use slang, we talk over bad cell service, we say, while we're thinking.
All the time.
So how on earth did these pristine lab algorithms handle the absolute chaos of a real human conversation?
Well, the short answer is they didn't.
They didn't?
No, that is exactly the wall the industry hit in the early 90s. The algorithms worked beautifully when someone was reading a clean script from the Wall Street Journal into a high-end microphone.
Right, perfectly enunciated.
But in the real world, they completely fell apart. This raises an important question, though. How do you force an entire field of research to stop optimizing for the laboratory and start optimizing for reality?
You give them messier data.
You give them the switchboard telephone speech corpus in 1993.
The switchboard corpus?
Yes. It was a massive, unprecedented collection of spontaneous, unscripted, two-sided telephone conversations.
The ultimate reality check.
The field desperately needed it.
Oh.
Switchboard forced everyone to abandon clean, read speech, and deal with hesitations, overlapping voices, people laughing while talking.
Oh, that must mess up the audio so much.
Completely. And you had to deal with the terrible limited bandwidth of 1990s telephone lines.
Because if a recognition system crashes the second someone clears their throat, it's pretty much useless in a real product.
Exactly. And because the data was now so chaotic, researchers needed standardized metrics just to honestly track if they were actually making progress.
Right, to see if the systems were getting better.
Yeah, so in 2000, the field widely adopted word error rate, or WER. It was a brutal, simple math equation. Count all the substituted words, deleted words, and wrongly inserted words, and divide by the total words a human actually said.
That is brutal. And then in 2003, they added the diarization error rate, or DR.
Yes.
Diarization basically means figuring out who spoke when, right?
Yes. Speaker clustering and timing. Because if you are transcribing a busy boardroom meeting, a perfect stream of words is completely useless if you don't know who is talking.
Obviously.
So DR gave the field a shared target to solve that who said what problem.
Okay, so they have the messy real-world data, they have the brutal metrics to keep themselves honest. But as I read through this section of Wang Yaolai's timeline, it struck me that these statistical HMM systems were essentially Frankenstein monsters.
In what sense?
Well, engineers were piecing together totally separate systems to make it work, right? They had a separate acoustic model to try and identify the raw sounds.
Right.
Then they bolted that onto a separate pronunciation dictionary, like the CMUDIC, to map those sounds to letters.
Yeah, that's true.
And then they bolted that onto a separate language model to try and guess the grammar. It was this heavily handcrafted pipeline, micromanaged by humans at every single step.
It was very complex.
To get machines to sound truly human, it seems like the field eventually had to stop micromanaging the rules and just let the machines figure it out themselves.
And that transition is exactly what triggered the neural turn in the 2010s.
Okay.
It was the moment we replaced those handcrafted, stitched-together pipelines with deep learning.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. Looking at this shift, it's like engineers spent 50 years meticulously drawing a map of a city, noting every single stop sign, one-way street, and alleyway to teach a car how to navigate.
I love this analogy.
And then deep learning comes along and says, you know, I don't need your map. I'll just drive around the city millions of times until I intuitively memorize the streets myself.
That maps perfectly to what happened. Deep neural networks started absorbing massive amounts of data and replacing those individual handcrafted components.
Mm.
You see an early signal of this with RNN transducers in 2012.
Which allowed for streaming recognition, right?
Yes.
Instead of waiting for you to finish an entire sentence so it could rigidly align the sounds to a dictionary, the model could fluidly output text as the audio rolled in real time.
Exactly. But the real shockwaves hit around 2014 with systems like DeepSpeech, and then exploded in 2016 with DeepMind's WaveNet. WaveNet fundamentally changed speech synthesis.
Because they finally ditched those old analysis synthesis vocoders, the recipes we talked about earlier that always sounded a little buzzy and robotic.
Yes, completely ditched them. Researchers realized that if you have enough data and immense compute power, you don't need human phonetic rules.
Wow.
A neural network can model the raw, physical audio waveform directly. WaveNet was generating audio by predicting the sound wave one tiny sample at a time, often 16,000 times a second.
16,000 times a second? That's insane.
Right. And because it built the sound from the microscopic level up, it generated speech with incredibly fine texture. It sounded natural and fluid in a way that previous systems just couldn't touch.
And they were applying similar brute force neural networks to the recognition side, too. But the timeline highlights a massive bottleneck they hit right around here.
Ah, yes. The data bottleneck.
Right. Training these deep neural networks required millions of hours of audio, which, you know, finding the audio isn't hard, but it required millions of hours of labeled audio.
That's the catch.
Meaning a human being had to sit there, listen to millions of hours of tape, and physically type out every single word being said so the AI had an answer key.
Which is incredibly expensive, slow, and ultimately limits how smart the model can get. You just can't hire enough humans to transcribe the internet.
No, definitely not.
This limitation forced what is arguably one of the most important leaps in modern AI, self-supervised learning. In 2019, a paper introduced a system called Wave2Vec.
This is where the models start teaching themselves. The way Wave2Vec bypassed that human labeling bottleneck is just brilliant. It basically played a fill-in-the-blank game, right?
It did. Imagine I take a recording of human speech, chop out a random half second of the audio, and force the AI to guess the missing sound based on the context of what came before and after it.
Okay.
Wave2Vec allowed models to learn the deep structure of speech directly from raw, untranscribed audio by doing exactly that.
So by playing this fill-in-the-blank game millions and millions of times, the model essentially internalized the physics, the phonetics, and the rhythm of human speech without needing a single human transcript.
Exactly.
And then, once it understands the underlying language of sound, you only need a tiny fraction of labeled data to fine-tune it to actually transcribe words.
Precisely.
Yep.
And this is a monumental shift. By understanding the raw structure of audio at such a deep level, speech models stop being single-purpose tools like, you know, a dictation software or a robotic GPS voice.
Right.
They're evolving into foundational AI.
which sends us rocketing into the 2020s. We enter the era of foundation models and what Wang Yali calls the omni-future. This is where the speed of innovation on the timeline just goes completely vertical.
It really accelerates.
I want to zero in on something that pops up in 2021 and 2022 with technologies like SoundStream and Encodec. The timeline talks heavily about codec tokens.
Yes, codec tokens are key.
If we compress audio into these discrete digital tokens, are we basically inventing a new alphabet that a language model can read and write? And if so, is it just text underneath?
What's fascinating here is, no, it is absolutely not just text.
Okay.
Think about this. If I say the word great with cheerful enthusiasm, and you say the word great with heavy sarcasm, a text transcript just writes the word G-R-E-T for both of us.
Right. All the nuance is gone.
Exactly. All the emotion, the sarcasm, the meaning is lost. A codec token is a vocabulary of pure sound.
So it captures the actual acoustic identity.
Yes. It captures the semantic meaning of the word, but it preserves your intonation, the breathiness of your voice, the unique pitch of your vocal cords, the emotion. It's an alphabet of acoustics, not letters. And this changed everything.
Because language models like the ones behind ChatGPT are already incredibly good at predicting the next token in a sequence.
Right.
So once you turn complex audio into these acoustic tokens, the language model can speak simply by predicting the next acoustic sound instead of the next text word.
That breakthrough led directly to models like Valli in 2023. Valli demonstrated zero-shot voice cloning.
Zero-shot?
Yeah, meaning you feed it just a three-second acoustic prompt of someone's voice, and because it understands these acoustic tokens so deeply, the language model can continue generating speech in that exact voice.
That is wild.
It carries over the emotion and the acoustic identity perfectly without ever being explicitly trained on that person's specific data.
3 seconds. That is just wow. And it brings us right to the threshold of where we are today, from 2024 to 2026, the Omni era. We see models like GPT-40, Moshi, and the Qwen Omni series.
This represents the final destruction of the Frankenstein pipeline.
Right, the stitched together pieces.
For years, even up until recently, if you used a smart speaker or a voice assistant on your phone, you were using a cascaded pipeline. You spoke. An automatic speech recognition model transcribed your speech into text.
Step one.
Then that text was fed into a large language model, which typed out a text reply.
Step two.
Then a text-to-speech model read that reply back to you. Speech to text, text to text, text to speech.
It's the ultimate game of telephone.
Exactly.
And every time you translate between those steps, you lose critical information. The language model in the middle doesn't hear you sigh. It doesn't hear your voice shake if you're sad. It just reads a sterile transcript.
It loses all the context.
And because it has to wait for that whole clunky pipeline to finish, it introduces a delay. It feels like you're talking over a walkie-talkie.
It creates a lot of human friction.
Hmm.
But starting in 2024, with models like Moshi and GPT-40, and culminating in the highly advanced Qwen 2.5 and Qwen 3.5 Omni models in 2025 and 2026.
The really new stuff.
Yeah. The industry moved to native real-time audio. The model processes those acoustic tokens directly. There is no text middleman.
So the model is actually hearing the audio wave itself, which enables what the timeline calls full duplex interaction.
Right. Full duplex simply means the model can listen, think, and speak simultaneously. Think about how humans talk. We don't wait for polite silence.
No, we definitely don't.
We nod, we say, yeah, we interrupt. If an Omni model is talking and you interrupt it, it actually hears you talking over it and stops dynamically, just like a person would.
Which completely changes the relationship you have with the machine. I mean, think about the voice assistant on your phone just 5 years ago. It wasn't really listening to you. It was just reading a transcript of your words.
Exactly.
The omnimodal models of 2026 actually hear you. They sense your hesitation, they pick up on a sarcastic tone, and they reply with native, emotionally resonant audio. They will dynamically throw in an or an ah to pace the conversation naturally.
Because the model isn't just generating words, it's generating what we call paralinguistic cues. The size, the tone, the rhythm of human interaction.
Wow.
Wang Yaoli's timeline highlights how the Qwen models introduce this incredible thinker-talker split architecture.
Thinker-talker.
Yeah. They maintain the deep, complex, text-based reasoning capabilities that language models are known for. That's the thinker. But they pair it with an independent audio token generator, the talker, that can stream out highly expressive speech in real time.
That is so smart.
By 2026, with Qwen 3.5 Omni, Speech is no longer an afterthought or a side channel. It is a first-class modality inside long-context, real-time AI agents.
It's just staggering. When we look back at the entire arc of this timeline, we started in 1939 with a person sitting at the Bell Labs voter, physically pumping foot pedals and mashing keys, sweating just to force a machine to squeak out a single robotic word.
A very stressful job.
Right. And in less than 90 years, we arrive at seamless, zero-shot, long-context, omnimodal AI agents that can hold a completely natural, full-duplex conversation with you in real time, picking up on your deepest emotions. Engineers drew the map, they made the rules, they threw the rules out to let machines learn the physics of sound themselves, and now the machines natively speak our language.
It truly is one of the most remarkable engineering trajectories in human history.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we connect this evolution to the bigger picture, it leaves us with something quite profound to consider regarding our own future.
Oh, like what?
Well, think about the threshold we have just crossed. We now have machines that can natively understand and generate speech with perfect intonation, perfect hesitation, and flawless emotional resonance.
Yeah.
An AI companion today is perfectly articulate. It is infinitely patient. It never gets tired, and it is hyper-responsive to every subtle shift in your tone of voice.
It's essentially the perfect conversational partner.
It is. But how will that change our human-to-human communication?
Oh, I see where you're going.
If you get used to spending hours a day interacting with an AI companion that flawlessly adapts to your every mood, that perfectly anticipates your needs and never misunderstands you, will you start expecting the real, messy, distracted, tired humans in your life to communicate with that exact same flawless efficiency?
That is a heavy thought.
As these machines become perfect communicators, do we lose our patience for human friction?
Wow. When the machine becomes a better listener than your best friend, what happens to the friendship? That is a brilliant and slightly terrifying question to leave off on. Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive into the evolution of speech technology. It's been an incredible journey through Wang Yao Li's timeline. From foot pedals to omni models, and we hope you found it as mind-bending as we did. Until next time, keep listening and keep questioning.